Pressure. The Tantra Vision, Volume 2. Talks on the Royal Song of Saraha.
Given at the Osho Commune International.
Pune, India.
Discourse number 5.
Bhagwan.
Non-memory is convention's truth, and mind which has become non-mind is ultimate truth. This is fulfillment. This is the highest good. Friends, of this highest good, become aware. In non-memory is mind absorbed. Just this is emotionally perfect and pure. It is unpolluted by good or bad of worldliness, like a lotus, unaffected by the mud through which it grows. Yet with certainty must all things be viewed as if they were a magic spell. If without distinction you can accept or reject samsara or nirvana, steadfast is your mind, free from the shroud of darkness. In you will be self-being, beyond thought and self-originated. This world of appearance has from its radiant beginning never come to be. Unpatterned, it has discarded patterning. As such, it is continuous and unique meditation. It is non-mentation, stainless contemplation, and non-mind.
An ancient sea. It must have been a morning like this. The trees were dancing in the morning sun, and the birds were singing. And the house of a great mystic of those days, Uddalaka, was celebrating the coming back of his son, Sweet Ketu, from the house of the master where he was sent to study. Sweet Ketu comes, the father receives him on the door, but feels something is missing. Something is missing in Sweet Ketu, and something is present which should not be present. A subtle arrogance, a subtle ego. That was the last thing the father was waiting for. In those ancient days, the education was basically the education of the non-ego. A student was sent to the forest university to live with the master so that he can dissolve himself and he can have a taste of existence. Rumors have been coming that Sweet Ketu has become a great scholar. Rumors were there that he has won the greatest award. And now he comes and Uddalaka is not happy. Yes, he has brought the greatest award that the university could have conferred. He has passed on the examination, the highest degree he has obtained. And he comes loaded with much knowledge, but something is missing. And the father's eyes are full of tears. Sweet Ketu cannot understand it. He says, is something wrong? Why you are unhappy? And the father says, one question. Have you learned that one by learning which everything is known, and by forgetting which all knowledge is futile, meaningless, just a burden, not a help but a harm? Sudhikatu said, I have learnt all that was available there. I have learnt history, I have learnt philosophy, I have learnt mathematics, I have learnt the Vedas, I have learnt language, I have learnt art, I have learnt this and that. And he says all the names of all the sciences of those days. But the unhappiness of the father remains the same. He said, but have you learned that once? By learning which all is learned, and the son is a little annoyed. And he says, whatsoever my master could teach, I have learned. And whatsoever is written in the books, I have learned. About what you are talking, that one. Don't be mysterious. Say it exactly. What do you mean? Naturally, there was arrogance. He had come with the idea that now he knows all. He may be thinking as every student thinks, that now his father knows nothing. He must have come with the idea that now he has become a great knower. And here is his old father, who is not happy. And he is talking about something mysterious, the one. And the father says, do you see the tree yonder there? Go and bring a seed from the tree. It was a Naya growth tree. The son brings a seed of the tree. And the father says, from where the tree arises? And the son says, of course, from this small seed. This big tree, from this small seed. Break the seed and see from where that tree arises, that big tree. And the seed is broken. But there is nothing. In the seed there is emptiness. And the father says, can you see that emptiness from which this big tree arises? And the son says, I can infer. But I cannot see. How can you see the nothingness? And the father says, that is the one I am talking about. It is out of nothing that all comes. It is out of that creative voyage that all is born and one day dissolves back into it. You go back. You learn emptiness. You go back, you learn sunya. You go back, you learn this voyage. Because this is the origin of all, the source. And the source is the goal too. The beginning is the end too. You go and learn this basic, the fundamental. All else that you have learned is rubbish. Forget about it. It is all memory. It is all mind. Learn no mind, learn no memory. It is all knowledge that you have learned. Learn knowing, learn awareness, learn understanding. It is objective that you have learned, but you have not penetrated in your innermost core. The world is thought to be a big tree. And these are the four steps in Tantra. The voyage is the first step. The voyage in the seed. The seed is nothing but a container of that creative voyage. It contains that creative voyage. When the seed breaks down into the earth, that wild starts sprouting into a tree. This nothingness, what physicists will call no matter, this nothingness, this nothingness is the source. Out of this nothingness is born the tree. Then come flowers, fruits, and thousand and one things. But each thing again becomes the seed, and seed falls into the earth and again becomes that wideness. This is the circle of existence, from nothing to nothing, from nowhere to nowhere. In the middle of two nowheres is the dream, the samsara. In the middle of two nothings are all things. Hence they are called dream stuff. Hence they are called maya. Hence they are called nothing but thoughts, fantasies. This is the tantra tree. No mind is the beginning of all and the end of all. Out of no mind, what tantra calls arises unorigination. Out of unorigination arises non-memory. Out of non-memory arises memory. This is the tantra tree. No mind, nothingness means all is potential, nothing is actual yet. All is possible, probable, but nothing has happened. Existence is in the seed, fast asleep, resting. The state of rest, the state of unmanifest being. Remember it, because only then you will be able to understand these sutras. These sutras are of great importance, because understanding them, you can go into your own mind and search the no mind. The first state, no mind, everything potential, nothing actual. The second state, unorigination, is still nothing has become actual, but things are getting ready to become actual. In a way, it is the same like the first, with a slight difference. In the first, everything is absolutely at rest. The rest is absolute. Nothing may happen for millions of years. In the second, nothing has happened yet, but things are ready to happen any moment. The potentiality is ready to explode into actuality. It is like a runner who is ready to run any moment the whistle is given. He is on the verge. He is just standing on the line, absolutely ready. Once the symbol is given, he will be running. Unorigination means nothing has originated yet, but is ready to be born. Unorigination means pregnant state. The child is in the womb. Any moment the child may be coming. Yes, it has not come yet. So in that way it is similar to the first state, but it is very, very ready. In that way it is not similar to the first state. The third state is called non-memory. The child is born. The experience has become actual. The world has come in. But there is still no knowledge. Non-memory. Just think of the first day child is born. He opens his eyes. He will see these green trees. but he will not be able to recognize that they are green. How he can recognize they are green? He has never known green before. He will not be able to recognize that they are trees. He will see the trees, but he will not be able to recognize them because he has never known before. His perception will be pure, uncontaminated by memory. Hence this state is called non-memory. This is the state Christians talk about when Adam lived in the Garden of Eden. No knowledge. He has not tasted yet the fruit of the tree of knowledge. This is the state every child lives early in life. For a few months, the child sees, listens, touches, tastes, but no recognition arises. No memory is formed. That's why it is very difficult to remember the early days of your life. If you try to remember, you can go easily up to the 5th year. A little more effort, 4th. A little more effort and hard effort, and you can go up to the 3rd. Then suddenly there is blank. Then you cannot remember. Why? You were alive. In fact, you were so alive, you will never be alive so much again. Those 3 first years were the most alive time of your life. Why memory is not there? Why you cannot penetrate into them? Because recognition was not there. Impressions were there, but there was no recognition. That's why Tantra calls this state non-memory. You see, but by seeing, knowledge is not created. You don't gather anything. You live moment to moment. You slip from one moment into another without carrying the first moment into the another. You don't have any past. Each moment arises absolutely fresh. That's why children are so alive and so fresh. And their life is so full of joy, delight, wonder. Small things make them so happy. And small incidents make them so tremendously excited, ecstatic, and they are continuously surprised. Just a dog passes by and they are surprised. A cat comes in the room and they are surprised. You bring a flower and the color is tremendous. They live in the psychedelic world. Everything is luminous. Their eyes are clear. No dust has gathered yet. Their mirror reflects perfectly. This is the state of non-memory, the 3rd stage. And then comes the 4th stage, memory, the state of mind. Adam has eaten the fruit of knowledge. He has fallen. He has come into the world. From no mind to mind is the passage into the world. No mind is nirvana. Mind is samsara. If you want to go back again to that original purity, that primal innocence, that primordial purity of consciousness, then you will have to go backwards, and these same steps will be the steps. Memory has to be dissolved into non-memory. Hence the insistence of all meditations, the mind has to be dropped. The thoughts have to be dropped. Move from thought to no thought.
then from no thought to unorigination, and then from unorigination to no mind. And the drop drops into the ocean. You are again the ocean. You are again the infinite. You are again the eternal. No mind is eternity. Mind is time. Now, the other day I talked about four mudras. Karma mudra, the action gesture, Jnana mudra, the knowledge gesture, Samaya mudra, pure time gesture, and Mahamudra, the great gesture, the space gesture. They are also connected with these four states. The first karma mudra is memory. Tantra says that whatsoever you think is action, it is nothing but memory. In fact, action has never happened. It is a dream that you have lived through. It is your projection. Action happens not. Action cannot happen in the very nature of things. Action is just a mind dream. You project it. So first, karma mudra is exactly parallel to memory. The day you drop memory, you go beyond action. Then two things happen through you, but you are no more the actor, you are no more the doer of them. The ego disappears. Things flow through you, but you are not the doer of them. The trees don't try to grow. Growth happens, but they are not trying to grow. Flowers bloom, but there is no effort involved. Rivers flow, but they are not tires. Stars move, but they are not worried. Things are happening, but there is no doer. The second state is Jnana mudra, the knowing gesture. You simply watch, you simply know. You don't do anything. Things happen, you are just a watcher. You don't become identified as a doer. Then the third mudra is Samaya mudra. Then by and by, even the knower is not needed. There is nothing to know. First action disappears, then knowledge also disappears. Then there is pure nowness. Just time flows in its purity. All is. Nothing has to be done and nothing has to be known. You are a simple being. Time goes on flowing by the side. You are undisturbed, unperturbed. All desire to do or to know has disappeared. There are only two kinds of desires. The lower kind is of doing something. The higher kind is of knowing something. The lower kind needs the body to do, the higher kind needs only the mind to know. But both are desires. Both have gone. Now you sit alone. Things move, time flows, everything goes on happening. You are neither a doer nor a knower. And then the fourth gesture, the Mahamudra, the great gesture. Even you are no more. Action dropped, knowledge dropped, then even time dropped, and then you also disappear. Then there is silence. This is what silence is. What you call silence is not silence. Your silence is just a far away reflection, a very poor silence. Sometimes you feel a little relaxed, and the mind is not spinning so fast as it goes ordinarily. The mind is a little relaxed, you feel silence. That's nothing. Silence is when action gone, knowledge gone, time disappears, and you too. Finally, you are gone. One day, suddenly you find you are not. One day you suddenly find everything has disappeared. Nothing remains. In that nothingness, the great gesture, you are infinite. With first karma mudra, there are thoughts, and naturally with thoughts, past and future. Because either thoughts are of the past or they are of the future. With thoughts, the anxiety, tension, anguish. With the second jnana mudra, memory dissolves into non-memory. No past, no future. Only now. Mind asleep. Not dead yet, can wake up again. So many times jnana mudra happens and is lost. That's what is the meaning of gaining meditation and losing it. Mind is not distired, it simply goes to sleep in the second case. It has a little sleep, that's all. It goes into sleep. Again, comes back, sometimes with vengeance. Comes back with tremendous energy. Of course, it has rested. So, after each deep meditation, you will find the mind is spinning more. Has got more energy now. Has been in rest and becomes more active. In the second jnana mudra, mind goes to sleep, but has not disappeared yet. But you can have a little taste of no mind for a moment, for a split second. The ray enters. You are thrilled. And the taste creates trust. This is where trust arises. Trust is not a belief. It is a taste. When you have seen this light, even for a single moment, then you can never be the same man again. You may lose it, but it will haunt you. You may not be able to get it again, but you will not be either able to forget it. It will be always there, and whenever you will have time and energy, it will start knocking on your doors. This is the state that can happen in the presence of a master very easily. This is contact high. A man who has attained to the fourth stage, to no mind, in his presence, this state, second, jnana mudra, can happen. Hence, down the ages, seekers have been searching for a master. From where to get the taste? You cannot get it through books. Books will only supply belief. From where to get a living experience? And you cannot have that living experience because you don't know what exactly it is. In what direction to move. what to do, and doubt is always there whether it exists at all. Maybe it is just a dream, a few mad people, and they are in very minority, a Buddha, a Christ, a Sarha. They are very small portion of humanity. The greater majority lives without such experiences. Who knows, these people are mad. Who knows, these people have a certain perversion. Who knows, these people are cheats, frauds. They may be deceiving others. Or maybe they are not cheats, honest people, but they are deceived themselves. They may have auto-hypnotized themselves. They may have created a hallucination. Or they may have dreamed. Maybe these were dreamers and good dreamers. There are good dreamers and there are bad dreamers. Bad dreamers are those whose dreams are always in black and white, flat, two-dimensional. Good dreamers are those whose dreams are in three dimensions, always colorful. These three-dimensional dreamers become poets. Do you remember any time having a dream in color? Very rarely a person sees dream in color, otherwise they are in black and white. If you see your dreams in color, then there is a possibility of your being a poet, a painter. Otherwise not. Who knows, these mystics are great dreamers, and they dream in three dimensions. So their dream looks absolutely actual. And naturally they devote so much time to their dreams, it is possible they become obsessed with the dream, and nothing like this is really real. This doubt persists. This doubt follows every seeker. It is natural, nothing to be worried about. How to drop this doubt? The scriptures say simply drop it and believe. But how to drop it? You can believe, but deep down the doubt will continue. Saint Augustine has a prayer. He used to pray every day to God, God, I believe. I absolutely believe. But take care. Have mercy on me, so the doubt does not arise again. But why? If the belief is absolute, then from where this fear is arising? From where this prayer? I believe, says Saint Augustine, and you take care of my unbelief. But the unbelief is there. Maybe you have repressed it. Out of greed, out of lust for God, out of lust and desire for the other world, you may have repressed it, but it is there, and it goes on gnawing in your heart. You cannot drop it unless some experience happens to you. But how the experience can happen? The scriptures say, unless you believe, the experience will not happen. Now this is a very complex phenomenon. They say the experience will not happen unless you believe. And how the experience can happen? Because you cannot believe until the experience happens. Only experience can create belief, belief without doubt. A doubtless trust. this doubtless trust is possible only if you are in the presence of someone to it has happened. In the presence, someday, sitting silently, not knowing, not trying, not desiring, it happens. It happens like a flash of light, and your whole life is transformed. This is what is meant by conversion. You are converted. You are transformed. You have moved to a new plane. The presence of somebody who lives higher than you has uplifted you. Unawares, in spite of yourself, you have been dragged. Once you have tasted, then there is trust. And when there is trust, you can move into the third and the fourth. The presence of the Master can lead you only to the second, Jnana Mudra. Yes, he can give you a little knowing, a little taste of his being. When Jesus was departing, he breaks the bread and says to his disciples, "Eat it, it is me." Pours wine and says, "Drink it, this is my blood, this is me." This is very symbolic, it is a metaphor. This is Jnana Mudra. Jesus is saying, you can have a little taste of me. You can drink me. You can eat me. Each disciple is a cannibal. He eats of the Master. He absorbs the Master. That's what eating means. What do you do when you eat something? You digest it. You absorb it. It becomes your blood. It becomes your bone. It becomes your marrow. It becomes your consciousness. That's what eating is. What do you do with a Master? You eat his presence. You eat his wife. And you digest it. And by, it becomes your consciousness. The day it becomes your consciousness, you are a sannyasin, not before it. Before it, sannyas is formal. Before it, sannyas is just a beginning towards this phenomenon. Without being a sannyasin, it will be difficult for this to happen, because with sannyas you become open and vulnerable. When you are open and vulnerable, someday, in some moment, things fall together. In some moment, your energy is at such a state that the Master's energy can pull it. In some moments you come very close, in some love moment, in some joy moment, in some celebration, you come close to the Master and you can be hooked. And just a glimpse, just a drop of that nectar goes down your throat and you are converted. Now you know. Now you know yourself. Now there is no need to believe. Now, even if the whole world says God does not exist, it does not matter. You will be able to fight against the whole world. Because you know. How can you deny your own knowledge? How can you deny your own experience? That a small drop is more powerful than the whole world. That a small drop is more potential than your whole past. Millions of lives are nothing. Therefore, that is small drop. But this can happen only when you are close. People come to me and they ask, why sannyas? Can't we here? Can't we be here without taking sannyas? Yes, you can be here as long as you want, but you will not be close. You can sit exactly by my side. I can hold your hands. That will not do. Vulnerability on your part, openness on your part. Just few days before, a young man was asking that what is the basic reason for ochre robes, for the mala, for the locket? What rationale? There is none, I told him. This is just absurd. He was puzzled. He said, but if it is absurd, then why you impose it? And I told him, precisely that's why. If I say something which is rational and you do it, that will not surrender you to me. That will not be the gesture. If something is rational and you are convinced of its rationality and then you follow it, then you are following your reason, not me. If something is rational and can be proved rationally, scientifically, and you follow it, you are not vulnerable to me. You are not available to me. That will not be of any use. You will be still following your reason. So each master down the ages has developed few absurd things. They are simply symbolic. They simply show that yes, you are ready and you are not asking for the reason. You are ready to go with this man, and if he has some eccentric ideas, that too you allow. This loosens your head. Just it makes you a little more open. Enlightenment can happen in any color. Orange is not a must. It can happen in any color. It can happen without any locket. It can happen without any mala. But then why? The why is its absurdity. The reason is that it is meaningless. It is just a gesture on your part that you are ready to go into something even if it is absurd. You are ready to go beyond your reason. That's the meaning of it. This is a very small beginning. But small beginnings can end into big things. When the Ganges comes out of the Himalayas, it is just a drip drop. You can hold it in your hand. It is such a small phenomenon. But by the time it reaches to the ocean, it is so vast and so huge and so enormous. It will drown you. You cannot hold it anymore. This is a small gesture. Wearing orange and the mala and the locket, a very absurd thing, but a small gesture, a beginning of something. You love a man so much that you are ready to do something absurd for him, that's all. This makes you vulnerable to me. And you can get the measles more easily then. Truth is infectious. and you have to be available for it. Doubt is a sort of inoculation. It protects. Reason protects. Protected, you will never move anywhere. Protected, you will die only. Protected, you are in your grave. Unprotected, you are available to God. To be in a close proximity to a master, the phenomenon can happen one day, you are uplifted. Suddenly you have wings. A little taste of the freedom and the sky. And then things can be done on your own. Then the third becomes possible, Samay Mudra. Then you can start looking in this direction that has opened within you. And you can start moving. Now you know where to move, where to go. Now you have a certain intuitive grasp of it. Now you know a certain knack. Religion is not science, religion is not art, it is a knack. But the knack comes through taste, through experience. Then, Samay Mudra is unorigination. Parallel to unorigination, anutpada. Then mind is not only asleep, mind has dropped. But with the second, mind will come back. It is only asleep. With the third, mind will not come easily back, but is still possible to bring it back. With the second, it will come back. It will happen. With Jnana Mudra, it will be coming back on its own. With the third Samay Mudra, if you want to bring it back, you can bring it back, but otherwise it won't be coming on its own. With the fourth Mahamudra, even if you want to bring it back, it is impossible. You have gone beyond. You have transcended. This fourth stage, which is the beginning of existence, is the goal of Tantra. Things more, then we can enter into the sutra. From memory to non-memory, you will need awareness one. You will have to become more watchful about the thoughts, dreams, memories, flicking by, moving around you. You will have to have more attention, focused on the thoughts. Thoughts are the objects and you will have to become aware of them. This is awareness first, awareness one. Krishnamurti talks about this. He calls it choiceless awareness. Don't choose. Whatsoever thought is passing by, don't judge, just watch it. Just see that it is moving. If you go on watching, one day thoughts don't move that fast. Their speed is slowed down. Then someday, gaps start coming. One thought goes and another does not come for a long time. Then, after some time, for hours, thoughts simply disappear. And the road is just empty of traffic. Ordinarily, you are always in a rush hour. Thoughts are jamming in, one thought upon another. Track behind track. It is not only one track. There are many tracks going on. And the man you call a thinker has more tracks than the ordinary man. If you know anything about chess, then the chess player needs five-track mind. At least he has to think about the five moves ahead. If he is going to do this, then what the other will do, then what he will do, then what the other will do, this way. He has to go at least five moves ahead. Unless he can hold these five moves in his mind, he cannot be a great chess player. The people you call thinkers have many track minds, very complex minds, and all tracks are jammed. And from every direction there is rush, and it is always rush hour, even in the night. When you are asleep, the mind goes on and on. It goes on working. It is a 24-hour worker. It does not ask for any holiday. Even God got tired after 6 days and had to rest on Sunday, but mind needs no Sunday. For 70, 80 years it goes on working and working and working. It is maddening. No rest. You must have seen a photograph of a Rodin's statue, the thinker. In the East we laugh about the statue. Because it is so anxiety ridden. The Rodin's thinker, even in the marble statue, you can see his head, you can feel his anxiety. That is Rodin's art. You can think how Aristotle would have been. R. A. Bertrand Russell, R. Friedrich Nietzsche. And there is no surprise if Nietzsche goes mad. This Rodin's statue is bound to go one day mad, the way it is. Thinking, thinking, thinking. In the East, we have not bothered much about thinkers. We have loved the non-thinkers. Buddha is a non-thinker. So is Mahavira. So is Sarha. These are non-thinkers. Even if they think only to move towards non-thinking. They use thinking as a jumping board for the non-thinking. From memory to non-memory, the bridge is awareness one. It is awareness of the object. From non-memory to unorigination, you will need awareness second. That's what Gurdjieff calls self-remembering. Krishnamurti's work is totally based on awareness one. Gurdjieff's work is totally based on awareness two. With awareness one, you look at the object, at the thought, you become attentive about the object. With awareness second, awareness two, you become doubly attentive of the object and the subject both. Your arrow of consciousness is double arrowed. On one side you have to become aware of the thought, and on another side you have to become aware of the thinker. The object, subjectivity, both have to be in the light of awareness. Gurdjieff's work goes deeper than Krishnamurti. He calls it self-remembering. A thought is moving in your mind. For example, a cloud of anger is moving. You can watch the cloud of anger without watching the watcher, then this is awareness one. If you watch the cloud and at the same time you continuously remember who is watching, I am watching, then this is awareness two, what Gurdjieff calls self-remembering. From memory to non-memory, awareness one will be helpful. But from non-memory you can fall back again very easily into memory, because mind only goes to sleep. With awareness first, you simply tranquilize the mind. You drug the mind. The mind goes into sleep. It is a great rest and a good beginning, but not the end. Necessary, but not enough. With the awareness second, the mind falls into the unorigination, anutpada. Now, it will be very difficult to bring it back. You can bring it back, but it will not come on its own. It is not impossible to bring it back, but it is not easy. With Gurdjieff, the work goes still deeper. And Tantra says there is an awareness third, awareness three. What is this awareness three? When you forget about the object and you forget about the subject and there is just pure awareness, you are not focused on anything. Just a hovering pure awareness. Not attentive about anything. Just attentive. Unfocused. Unconcentrated. With the first you are concentrated on the object, with the second you are concentrated with the subject too, and object too. With the third you drop all concentration, you are simply alert. This third leads you to the state no mind. Now, the sutras. Non-memory is convention's truth, and mind which has become no mind is ultimate truth. Tantra divides truth in two ways. One it calls hypothetical truth, vyavaharika. Second it calls ultimate truth, paramarthika. The hypothetical truth is only namesake. It is called truth because it looks like truth. It is just practically so. It has a certain glimpse of the truth. It is almost like this. If somebody shows you a picture of me and you say, yes, it is a true picture. What do you mean by a true picture? How the picture can be true? The statement that the picture is true simply means that it resembles the original. The picture in itself is untrue. All pictures are untrue. It is just a paper. How I can be on the paper? How I can be the paper? How I can be the lines? Even a true photograph is just a photograph. But by saying it is a true photograph, we say that yes, it resembles the original. I have heard one anecdote. A very beautiful woman, but very talkative woman, once came to see Pablo Picasso. And she talked too much. And Pablo Picasso was bored. And she was very rich, so he could not throw her either. And she was a great customer of his paintings, so he had to listen. And she was going on and on and on. Then finally she said, just the other day, I saw your photograph in a friend's house. It was so alive. And I loved it so much that I kissed it. Picasso said, wait, did it kiss back? The woman said, what are you talking? Have you gone mad? How the picture can kiss back? And Picasso said, then it was not me. Certainly it was not me. A picture is true because it resembles. It is untrue because it is a picture. This is what Tantra calls Vyavaharik truth. Non-memory is convention's truth. It is just so-so. It is just called truth conventionally. Memory, you know. Non-memory happens sometimes in the presence of a master, or meditating, or praying. But even non-memory is just a hypothetical truth. It is a photograph. Yes, it resembles the true no mind, but only resemblance. It is not yet the true mind. To make you aware of it and to keep it in your mind, Tantra insists again and again that this has not to be taken as the goal. It is just the beginning. Many people become stuck when they attain to non-memory. When they can have few glimpses of no mind, they think they have arrived. It is tremendously beautiful. It is very alive. In comparison to memory, it is ecstatic. But it is nothing in comparison to the real no mind state. Because memory is still there, fast asleep, snoring, can wake any moment. Mind is still there, waiting for its opportunity to come back. Yes, the traffic has stopped for a moment, but the traffic will start again. It is good to have these glimpses, because they will lead you further, but it is not good to get stuck. This is what happens through drugs. LSD, marijuana, mescaline. This is what happens. This second stage, non-memory. For a moment, under the impact of the drug, memory disappears. It is a chemical enforced stage. In the chemical shock, memory disappears. This is what happens through electroshock. We give electroshock to mad people whose memory has become such a burden to them and they cannot get out of it by themselves. We give them electroshock or insulin shock. Why? Because through the shock, electricity passing through their brain waves, giving them such a shock that for a moment they become uprooted. They lose track. They forget what they were thinking. What was there For a moment they are dazzled by the shock, and when they come back they cannot recapture. That's why electroshock helps. But electroshock or chemical shocks don't give you the real thing. They give you only a photograph. No memory is convention's truth, and mind which has become no mind is the ultimate truth. So don't be contented unless you attain to no mind, the fourth stage. This is fulfillment, says Sarha. This is the highest good. Friends of this highest good become aware. This is fulfillment, no mind, because you have arrived to the very source of life and existence. And unless it happens, there is no contentment and no fulfillment. This is real flowering. This is Sahasrar. The 1,000-petaled lotus has bloomed. Your life is released in fragrance and celebration and joy. This is what God is. This is the highest good, the summum bonum. There is nothing higher than this. This is Nirvana. Friends of this highest good become aware. Sarha says, remember there are three kinds of awareness. Awareness one, of the objects. Awareness two, of the object and the subject. Awareness three, pure awareness. Go into these three stages of awareness so you can attain the summum bonum. And he says to the king and to the others who must have gathered to listen to this great discourse, friends. He calls them friends. This has to be understood. From the side of the master, the disciple is the friend, but not from the side of the disciple. Sometimes few sannyasins write to me. Just the other day there was a question. One sannyasin has written that, Bhagwan, I cannot think about you as my master, but I think about you as my friend. Is there something wrong in it? Nothing from my side. It's perfectly okay. But from your side, something is missing. And you will be at a loss. Why it is so? From the side of the masters, you are friends. Because he can see that it is only a question of time. Otherwise you have already arrived. Only a question of time. And one day you will become awake. You are all Buddhas. From the side of the master, whole existence is already enlightened. The rocks and the trees and the stars and the animals and the birds and men and women. The whole existence is enlightened from the side of the master. It is only a question of time, and time is irrelevant. You are all there. You don't know, that is true. But the master knows. The day I knew my own self, I have known the very self of existence. Since then, I have not looked at anybody as unenlightened. I cannot. That is impossible. Yes, you don't recognize your fact, but how I can deny it? From my side, you are friends. You are me. But from your side, if you think that you cannot accept me as your master and you can only think about me as a friend, then it is up to you. But you know, you will miss. What is the difference when you accept a person as a friend? mean you accept him as your equal. A friend is equal to you. Yes, you are friends to me because I see you are just equal to me. There is no difference. But if you see that I am equal to you, then your growth will stop. When I see that you are equal to me, I am raising you to my being. When you see I am equal to you, you are pulling me down to your level. Just watch the difference. When I say you are equal to me, I am trying to pull you to me. When you say, Bhagwan, you are equal to us, you pull me to your level. Naturally, you cannot pull anywhere else. You don't know any other level. And why it is difficult to accept somebody as your master? The ego. The ego wants at the most you can accept as the friend. It is up to you. It is your choice. If that is the way you want it to be, let it be that way. But then I am not responsible if nothing happens to you. Then it is your responsibility. Utterly your responsibility if nothing happens to you. Because you have created the barriers. I can flow towards you only when you look upwards at me. Because the flow of energy is possible only downwards. I am not losing anything if you think me as your friend. I am not losing anything even if you think me as your enemy. That doesn't matter. You will be losing. The man who thinks that I am his enemy and the man who thinks I am his friend, both think me in the same way. The man who thinks me, I am his enemy, is making me equal to him. And the man who thinks I am his friend is doing the same. They are not different people. When you look upwards, you can be hooked by the upward energy. You can be pulled. Sarha says, friends of this highest good become aware. From the master's side, everybody is a friend. Those who think they are friends, and also those who think they are enemies, they are friends. In non-memory is mind absorbed. Just this is emotionality perfect and pure. It is unpolluted by the good or bad of worldliness, like a lotus unaffected by the mud from which it grows. In non-memory is mind absorbed. Memory washed is absorbed into non-memory. In the non-memory, mind starts disappearing. And when the mind starts disappearing, there arises a new kind, a new quality of energy in you, the heart energy. Just this is emotionality perfect and pure. Then the heart starts functioning. When the mind is dissolved, the energy that was involved in the mind becomes love. It has to become something. Energy cannot be destroyed. No energy is ever destroyed. It is only transformed. It changes its forms. Mind is taking almost your 80% energy, giving you nothing in back, returning you nothing, just goes on absorbing your 80% energy. It is like a desert. The river goes on flowing and the desert goes on absorbing it. And nothing comes back. And the desert does not even become green. Does not even grow grass. Does not even grow trees. Does not even become a small pool of water. Nothing. It remains dry and dead. And it goes on soaking the life energy. Mind is a great exploiter. That is where, in the desert of the mind, In the wasteland of the mind you are lost. Sarha says, when this happens that the memory is dissolved and you attain to non-memory, suddenly your total quality changes. You become more loving. Compassion arises in you. The same energy that was going into the desert moves into a fertile land. The heart is the land of fertility. Just this is emotionality perfect and pure. It is unpolluted by the good or bad of worldliness. And in the heart, there is no distinction between good and bad. The heart knows no distinctions. All distinctions belong to the mind. The heart simply loves without any distinctions. The heart simply flows without any categories, without any judgment. The heart is innocent. It is unpolluted by the good or bad, like lotus unaffected by the mud from which it grows. It grows from the same mind energy, from the same mud of thoughts, thinking, desire, lust. But it is a lotus. It grows out of the mud but remains unpolluted by the mud. Yet, with certainty, must all things be viewed as if they were a magic spell. If without distinction you can accept or reject samsara or nirvana, steadfast is your mind, free from the shroud of darkness, in you will be self-being beyond thought and self-originated. Sarha says to the king, a great technique he is giving to him. Listen to it, meditate over it and try it. You know well, you have dreamed millions of dreams, but again and again in the dream you forget that it is a dream. Again it becomes reality. Tonight you are going to dream again. What kind of unconsciousness is this? Each night you dream, in the morning you find it was false. It was not there, it was just images, just imagination. Again you are a victim, again you dream, and again you think this is real. Why can't you see in the dream that this is unreal? What prevents you from seeing? So much experience of so many dreams and so many conclusions, and all unexceptionally proving one thing, the dreams are not true. Again, tonight you will be a victim. The dream will be there and you will think that it is true. You will live it as true. Tantra develops a technique. The technique is, think of the world while you are awake as a dream. For example, right now, you are listening to me. Think it as a dream. It is easy to think it right now rather than in a dream. Many times you will listen to me in your dreams. Then it will be too difficult. You will be fast asleep. Right now it can be done more easily. Right now you can think that you are in a dream. Bhagwan is your dream. He is talking in your dream. These trees are dream trees. These flowers of Gulmohar are dream flowers. These birds are singing in dream. All is just a magic spell. You think it while you are awake. You continue it thinking for at least 2-3 months. And you will be surprised. One day suddenly in the dream you will recognize this is a dream, because you have practiced it. And when the real trees also look like dream through practice, what to say about unreal trees? They will look unreal. And Tantra says basically even these trees are just a dream. They are not real stuff. What Tantra means by reality? Tantra means that which remains always and always. That which comes and goes is unreal. That which is born and dies is unreal. This is the definition of unreality in Tantra. That which is momentary is unreal. That which is eternal is real. These trees were not here a few days before, and they will not be here after a few years. We were not here a few years before, and we will not be here after a few years. So it is a long dream. In the night, the dream persists only for 1, 2 hours or 6 hours, and this dream persists for 60 years or 70 years. But just the duration of time cannot make much difference. Whether a dream is of 1 hour or 100 years does not make much difference. The difference is of only duration. But it disappears. How many people have lived on the earth, do you know? Where they are. If they had not existed, what difference would have been there? They existed or not does not make much difference. They have all disappeared. That which appears and disappears is the dream. Sarha says, yet with certainty must all things be viewed as if they were a magic spell. He is giving a technique. View everything as if it is a magic spell. As if a magician has hypnotized you and all is false. And you are seeing it through hypnosis. If without distinction you can accept or reject sansara and nirvana, then there is nothing to accept and reject. If it is just a dream, then who bothers? You bother too much because you think it is real. Then whether you are poor or rich does not make much difference. Whether you are beautiful or ugly does not make much difference. Whether you are respected or not does not make much difference. If it is just unreal, a dream world, a maya, then what is there to choose? And what is there to reject? Then acceptance and rejection both drop. Then one lives purely without entanglements, without disturbances, without any in any way going off center, then one settles, then everything is okay. If without distinction you can accept or reject sansara or nirvana, steadfast is your mind, then whether you accept or reject does not make much difference. Then you can renounce the world, or you can live in the world. If you know this much, that all is just a dream, if you remain in this climate, that all is a dream, why? Sarha is saying to the king this. Sarha is saying, sir, you live in the palace, I live on the cemetery. You live with beautiful people, I live with ordinary, ugly people. You live in richness, I live in poverty. You live in the capital, I live here on the cremation ground, but it is all the same. That palace is a dream and this cremation ground is a dream. Your beautiful queen is a dream and my Aero Ismith woman is a dream. So what is the difference? If in the dream you become rich or you become poor in the morning, is there any difference? Do you feel very happy in the morning because you have been very rich in the dream? Do you feel very unhappy in the morning because you have been a beggar in the dream? It does not matter when you are awake. It does not matter. Sarha says, sir, I am awake. The third consciousness has happened. To me, all is dream. Dream and all. To me, all is dream. Dream within dream within dream. Now I don't make any distinction. I have gone beyond distinctions. No mind has arisen. So whether people respect me or insult me, whether they think Sara is a great Brahmin, a great mystic, a great knower, or they think that he has gone a perverse, that he is mad, crazy, insane, it's perfectly okay. This is true understanding. Then nobody's opinion can distract you. Then nothing can distract you, neither success nor failure, neither respect nor humiliation, neither life nor death. This is what the state of no distraction is. One has come home. Then one's mind is steadfast, free from the shroud of darkness. In you will be well-being, self-being. I have come home, says Sarha. My self-being has arisen. I have got my center now. I have lost everything. Only one thing, my self-nature, my self-being. Now I know my origin. Now I know my very source. Now I know my reality. Beyond thought and self-originated. I have moved beyond thought. These things don't distract me, sir. It's perfectly okay as it is. This is the attitude of a real sannyasin. All is perfectly okay as it is. This world, the last sutra, this world of appearance has from its radiant beginning never come to be. Unpatterned, it has discarded patterning. As such, it is continuous and unique meditation. It is non-mentation, stainless contemplation and no mind. The world of appearance has from its radiant beginning never come to be. Says Sarha, this world that you are seeing has never been there. It only appears. Just as a dream arises from nowhere and disappears back into nowhereness, so is this world. This world of appearance has from its radiant beginning never come to be. From the very beginning, nothing is. Just a ripple on the silent lake, and the ripple disappears. And you cannot catch hold of a ripple. Just a thought wave, just a vibration. Unpatterned, it has discarded patterning, and there is no pattern in it. It is not solid. How it can have any pattern? It is very liquid. It is very fluid. It has no pattern. Nobody knows what is good and what is bad. Nobody knows who is a saint and who is a sinner. Nobody knows what is virtue and what is sin. It is not patterns. This is tantra understanding into the very core of reality. It is unpatterned. It is a creative chaos. Ultimately, finally, nothing has to be condemned and nothing has to be appreciated. Unpatterned, it has discarded patterning. As such, it is continuous and unique meditation. This is a beautiful sutra. Sarha says, but forget about its reality and unreality. As such, it is a continuous and unique meditation. This existence all around, these trees, these birds, this cuckoo going mad, it is a continuous meditation and unique. If you can become aware of it, it will help you come home. It is a continuous, unique meditation. It is non-mentation. Don't bring your mind in. Just listen to it, see to it, touch it. Don't bring your mind in. It is non-mentation. Still less contemplation. Contemplate, but not through thoughts. Just through transparency. Watch, look, be. Not through analysis, not through logic. Relate through silence. That is stainless contemplation. Relate through silence. Relate through love. Relate. Relate to this cuckoo. Relate to the trees, to the sun. But don't think about them. Don't become a thinker. And no mind. So first, think the world is a dream, and then think the dreamer is also a dream. First the object is a dream, then the subject is a dream. When the subject and object both are dropped, when the dream disappears and so the dreamer, then there is no mind. This no mind is the very origin of all. This is what Uddalaka was asking to his son. He was saying, have you learned that one by learning which all is learned and by forgetting which all is forgotten? Have you seen that one? Have you come to that one? And the son is disturbed and he says, I have known all. But what you are talking about, my master never talked about this one. Then Uddalaka said, then you go back. Because all that you have brought is rubbish. You go back. In my family, we have always been real Brahmins. By a real Brahmin, he means we have known Brahma. We have known the truth. We are not just Brahmins by birth. You go back. You immediately go back. The welcome has been stopped. The music has been stopped. With tears. But Uddalaka sends his son back. After many years he had come from the master's house. And he is sent back immediately. Not even a rest for one day. Very disturbed, the young man goes back to the master. He says, but why didn't you teach me that one my father asks about? Why? All these years wasted? And my father thinks all this is nonsense. I don't know myself. And my father says, if you don't know yourself, what value is all your knowing? What we are going to do with your knowing of the Veda? You can recite the Veda, but what we are going to do with it? And in my family, the father says, we have always been real Brahmins. Go back, and before I die, become a real Brahmin. And don't come back unless you have become a real Brahmin. So, sir, teach me that one. The master laughed. He said, that one cannot be taught. Yes, it can be caught, but it cannot be taught. That's why I have not taught it. But if you insist, then a situation can be created. That's what all masters do. Just a creation of a situation. This commune is a situation. I cannot teach you truth, but I can create a situation in which you can start catching glimpses of it. My being here is a situation. My talking to you continuously is a situation. Not that I can teach you truth by talking, but just a situation in which sometimes a tremor goes into you. In which sometimes you catch hold of a vibe and it thrills you and takes you far away on a long journey inwards. So Master said, I can create a situation, and this is the situation. You take hold of all the cows of the ashram. 400 cows were there. And you take them to the deepest forest and go away as far as you can. As far as possible, so that you are absolutely inaccessible by other human beings. Then come back only when your herd has become of 1,000 cows, bulls. It will take many years. But you go back. And remember, don't see any human beings. Cows will be your friends and your family. You can talk to them if you like. And Swetketu went into the deepest forest where no human being has ever entered. And he lived with his cows for many years. The story is of tremendous beauty. Naturally, what you can talk with the cows, he must have tried in the beginning. And by, he thought it is meaningless. The cows simply look at you. Their eyes remain empty. There is no dialogue. Yes, in the beginning, just out of habit, he may have recited his Vedas. And the cows would have continued munching their grass. And they were not interested in the Vedas at all. And they will not praise him that you are a great knower. He must have talked about astrology and the stars. But the cows were uninterested. What can you do with the audience of cows? By and by he stopped talking. By and by he started forgetting. By and by, a great unlearning began. Years passed, and the story says, a moment came when the cows became 1,000. But by that time, Swetketu had completely forgotten to go back. He has really forgotten how to count. So he has not been counting for many years. Then the cows became very much disturbed. The time has come. Then one cow dares and she said, listen, it is time and we are now 1,000. And the master must be waiting. We should go home. This is time. So when the cows said, this is time, Swetketu followed them. When he came with those 1,000 cows to the master's house, the master came out, received, and said to his other disciples, look at these 1,001 cows. But the disciples said, there are only 1,000 cows and one is Swetketu. Master says, he has disappeared. He is no more there. He is a cow, so innocent. Look into his eyes. This is the state of no mind. And this has been the goal in the East. This state where you are not, and in fact for the first time you are. This state of death and this state of life, this state of a disappearance of the ego and the false and the appearance of the true and the authentic. This is the state we call realization, God-realization, self-realization. This is the state, Sarha says, self-being, beyond thoughts, beyond mind. Tantra means expansion. This is the stage when you have expanded to the uttermost. Your boundaries and the boundaries of existence are no more separate, they are the same. Less than that will not satisfy. When you become universal, you come home. When you become all, when you become one with all, when you are as huge as this universe, when you contain all, when stars start moving within you, and the earths are born in you and disappear, when you have this cosmic expansion, then the work is finished. You have come home. This is the goal of Tantra. Enough for today.